Hello, everybody. Welcome back to an all-new, very special episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. We're going to talk about my sold-out tour and my previous show at the America House from last Monday. Let's get into it! We are going to kick things off with some pretty big news today, as you can tell from the title of this episode, because I titled this episode before I even started recording, because I was so excited. The entire tour, as it is thus booked so far, is completely sold out, which is just so crazy to me. October 16, Hamburg, Kent Club, sold out. October 17, Berlin, France Club, sold out. Munich, October 20th at Strom, sold out. Back-to-back Munich slots again, 21st October at Strom, sold out. You guys, you just don't know what that means to me. That is so unbelievable. You know, I'm starting, I mean, for me, these are big venues. These are like 400 or 500 person venues. I think in total, it's about 2,000 tickets. And I've never sold that many tickets before. And I'm going to get into it more here pretty soon. But there is this unbelievable reaction time, or I should just try and make it a simpler sentence. I really have a really amazing follower base. There's a really great community behind this, and I'm so grateful for that, because I still don't totally feel at this moment that I've completely earned having a sold out tour. You know, it's not as if I've been doing stand up for, you know, 15 years, or that I have also, this is what's also confusing about it. I don't have multi-millions of people following me where it's like, okay, well, statistically out of, you know, 3 million people, 2,000 of them would want to come see your show. I think relative to the other creator people that I know, my numbers aren't, you know, enormous. Of course, I'm very, very grateful to have, you know, with the numbers that I'm at. I'm really, really happy for that. It's crazy. But like when I think about the math of, okay, this many people and then doing a tour, I cannot believe that everything sold out so quickly. I mean, except for the Hamburg show, Berlin and Munich sold out like the week that we announced that I was going to go on tour, which gave people like, you know, six plus months notice. I just can't. I mean, there's even like a waiting list. I'm so in love with these people. I'm so in love with you guys, the people who bought tickets early and are excited to go and put it in your calendars. And it makes me want to do a really good show for you. I found out at this event that I did on Monday, which I'm going to go into all the details about on that. But the way that had a really cool system, which also just keeps like just surprising me so much about you guys, is so when I got to the venue on Monday, we announced it that I was going to do this comedy show for free at this venue in Munich. And when I announced it on my page, the 310 seats or something were completely taken. So on the first day that it's announced, the show sold out, which is amazing. But what got me, like what really made me like sit down and go, oh my God, was finding out from the people who run the venue that because it sold out so quickly and there were still so many people who wanted to come, they were coming to the venue. They said they had multiple people showing up at the venue to come ask if they could still get tickets at the front desk because the website was saying it was sold out, but they wouldn't accept that, or they just couldn't believe it. And I, when they told me that, I really just kind of sat down on the staircase leading up to the stage and was like, what? I just can't believe that. And when people started to fill into the venue, I was peeking around the curtain a couple times, and it didn't look, for a good while, it didn't look completely full. And I thought, you know what? That's okay. It's okay. Some people had to cancel. It's been raining a lot in Germany, a lot of flooding, a lot of issues with the train systems. I understand. They couldn't make it. That's okay. It's not personal. It's just bad weather, and they couldn't make it. And then the sound guy came in the back and was like, don't worry. It's completely full. There's still hordes of people coming in, and they're in the lobby getting a beer or whatever. And I was like, what? And then when it was finally time to go out, it was every seat filled. And I even saw some people like on the sides of the chairs, I guess because even staff didn't have enough seats. So there's people like sitting on the stairs next to the seats. I just can't believe that. I feel so lucky. And I feel really like I need to try and soak all this stuff in as much as humanly possible. Because it really feels like how... you guys are taking such a gamble on me. I mean, I feel very good about how my first show went at the Mille back in January, but that was still just, like I said, you know, like my first show. It was just the first one. And... I wanted to do a smaller venue like that because I thought, well, there's a chance, you know, for 250 people or whatever, including staff. I was like, you know, I could probably fill that up, you know. I think we announced the January show back in like the previous October or something, and I was like, I think by then I can probably have it pretty close to sold out, and that's a big risk for me. Every single music show I ever performed was not even half the crowd that I had at that thing. You know, like even my debut, like album release show, I think was like, you know, 150, something like that, people, which is good, but it wasn't sold out. And I was hoping even by then that it would be sold out. And it just wasn't. It just wasn't there. The audience just wasn't there. And it was always kind of tough to book shows and do little tours around Germany and just not grab the people. And I never really understood why. And maybe even, I think, you know, I have my own doubts and my own insecurities about why my music doesn't work. You know, my voice, for example, or, you know, the way that I play some things. You know, I don't necessarily think that the songs are bad. Some are better than others, of course, but... you know, I always kind of attributed it to my voice. I thought, well, it's just not working. Like, I'm not confident in the way that I sing, so maybe it's not confident in the way that it comes off. But that's besides the point. The point is, all of these performances I've done for so many years, there was never a completely sold-out show, no matter how small, you know. If it was a 50-person venue, 20 would come. If it was a 15-person venue, 8 would come. If it was a... 200-person venue, you know, 100 would come. It was just always kind of like that. And then we announced this January show, and I think, well, hopefully I'm at the place now with these, you know, with this kind of engagement on my content, there's probably enough people who I could convince to at least just come see me, even if they just are only coming to see me because they like the videos, which a lot of people are, of course. Why else would they come at this stage? But I have a feeling like, okay, it's Munich, so I have a lot of friends. So I can at least make up for some of the spare tickets that way. And then it sold out in a couple of hours. So quickly, in fact, that in this newspaper article that came out about me, which is, there's a link tree in the show notes here, which has a direct link to the article from Süddeutsche Zeitung. It was sold out so quickly, in fact, that in that article, they interviewed the promoter of the venue, and he was like, we thought our system broke, because that just doesn't happen, which is so funny. And then I wrote them messages like, is this something wrong? Like, people are telling me it's sold out. That obviously isn't true. So please fix your website. And they're like, no. I mean, they're like, congrats. This has literally never happened like at our venue. This, they, like, I think it was like a record breaker for their venue, which is so cool. And then they had people emailing the venue. Hey, we saw the concert's already sold out. Can we do more? And then the venue was like, can we do two more shows? Can you do a 3-day weekend? And then that's when I really, it hit me. I was like, something is really different here. Something is really, really different here. And not even all of my friends could get into the show in January. Again, smaller venue, but still it sold out so quickly that like the friends I was going to use to fill up the extra space couldn't get in. So a lot of my friends didn't even get to see that show. And then we get to announcing a tour, which is a big gamble for me. You know, that show goes well. We get a lot of good press. I get a booking agency out of that. People who get in touch with me, and we make a contract, and you know, got connected to them through people that I trust and that I like. And they, you know, they say, here's what we imagine, 400, 500 person venues. I told them that for a tour, I really wanted like a seated, not theater, because that's, I'm not there yet, but like a seated thing, like turning a rock venue into a seated thing. But it just didn't work on this run. So it still is a lot of, I think it is all still standing, standing venues, like rock venues, but 500 people. So double the size of the venue. I mean, I go from like January is like 250 people standing to two back-to-back sold-out 500-person venues standing. So it's like a, it's from a sold-out 250-person show to 1,000 tickets, which is just, and that's in the same year. It's like 7 months apart, which is just so crazy. And I really am so thankful. And we're going to go all into this performance that I just did on Monday, because it was also really exciting how things shifted from January in that way, because that was the same show. It was the same hour. And the tour, of course, is all new stuff, which I've really, I've never had more of a fearful fire burning in me to make some new stuff and to get my new ideas down than I do, you know, right now. So thank you so much to everybody that bought tickets for this tour. It has just completely changed my life to see this, to sit here currently while recording this and just to look at the Eventim website for major artists and see that they're like, unfortunately, no more tickets are currently available for these following events. It was like Hamburg, Berlin, Munich, And for those who can't see this tour and wanted to get tickets but can't, well, there are waiting lists you can get onto for people who have to cancel their tickets. But also, these won't be the only cities. I did want to, this is a big leap for me, but I technically speaking, on like a more professional scale, I am still starting slow. Like, I'm only, it's only three major, like the three most major cities. So it's also a better gamble that I'll have enough people. Hamburg, you know, we were worried that it wouldn't sell out at all because the Hamburg crowd is apparently, from what my booking agent understands, Hamburg isn't the best city for stand-up comedy. That they just don't, they don't really grab on to stand-up comics as well. They don't really have so much of an audience for it. It's just, they're, you know, the events just don't sell as well as music. So getting to sell out 500 places in Hamburg is just so cool. That is so cool. Oh yeah, what I was trying to finish, what I wanted to say was like, after, if you didn't get these, and you also don't live in these cities or around them, we are going, we are planning for more cities in the spring. So, oh, sorry. We can expect to, you can expect to see a lot more cities in, coming up, you know. Probably we're still going to stick with primarily Germany for now, I do see a lot of people writing messages about wanting me to come to Austria or to Switzerland. And then crazy people who are like, come to Denmark, like to talk about Germans. But yeah, guys, it's so cool. So thank you very much. I had to kick things off with that great news. The entire Jordan Prince live on tour is completely sold out. So thank you very, very, very much, everybody. So that leads us to the show that just happened on Monday. So it's been a roller coaster of a week. Private life's been everywhere, all over emotionally. But Monday evening was such a great, like, reprieve from everything. I realize so much when I do something like that, how good that backstage fear is for me. How good it feels to when you make people laugh, you know, like I just love that. I just feed off of that. And to learn sort of switching gears in your head when you know, okay, maybe that joke doesn't work or this doesn't stick as well. And oh, if I say it like this, it hits a little harder. Maybe I'll try it like that. So the show that I did in January, I like this hour and I wanted to fix it and work on it and clean it up a lot and make it stronger. And now I had the opportunity recently to perform it again. And probably if there's any more performances like that, that for whatever reason pop up before this tour, I probably try that material as well, depending on how close it is to the tour. Maybe I should warm up things for the tour as well. And I'm pretty excited for those last couple of shows in Munich in October, because by then I will have played it to an audience, you know, back to back, and will have been able to correct and shift things around to make it even better by the time the last run comes along. The show on Monday was, I talked about it on the previous episodes. So Bayerischer Rundfunk, the famous BR here, this enormous broadcasting corporation, basically, has been around 75 years. This is the 75th year anniversary. And they asked me, because of the press that BR themselves gave me from my January show, they asked me if I would be interested in performing a stand-up comedy set. Originally, it was going to be at the BR at this famous like Studio One. But funny enough, they asked me if I wanted to do it at Studio One. And then I said, yeah, I'll do it. And then they said, Studio One's not available. I thought that was funny that they didn't have the venue locked before they had the artist. They asked me first and then was like, oh, oops, I can't play there. But it ended up being for the best, because then they moved the venue to the America House, which I didn't even know you could book things there, but you better believe I will definitely be coming back to this venue. Like, first off, it's a gorgeous seated room. It's enormous. At first sight, it kind of feels like a little conference-y, I have to admit. Like, you walk into the room and it's these tall wooden walls with this, you know, kind of hidden fluorescent light vibe, and the seats are these, you know, L-shaped wooden seats with like a very thin little cotton plaid pad for your bottom. And it's not very like theater-ish in the sense that you would like have quick and subtle access to a bathroom and like be able to go get more things from the bar. At least that is one thing about these rock venues, is like at the Mila, I could constantly see people sort of walking back and forth to the bar, and it didn't bother me. And I knew, hey, they're going to get drunk, they're going to laugh even more. Awesome. So for me, that was cool. The America House ended up being like the best place for this kind of event. And yeah, I would definitely be coming back. So I have to start from the beginning. Like I said earlier, the event immediately sold out. It's like 310 seats. Like with not including any staff, like there's 310 seats for the people and those seats were gone. And that was very, very cool to know. They have this enormous, enormous big black stage. It was just this enormous like theater. You could do a whole play up there on that stage, which was a big leap up for me going from the Mila to the America House stage. The Mila, for those who, I mean, a lot of you listening probably have never seen it before, but it's a, you know, it's good for bands because it's like a staggered stage. So you come, like there's like a staircase going right up the center. And on the left and right, there are these like smaller platforms, kind of like you'd imagine an old sort of 70s game show where like the beautiful blonde who's carrying the briefcase of money might walk down a staircase and have these gorgeous dancers on the left and right sides, like dancing as she strolls through to give, you know, to put the money on display for the contestant. It's a bit like that. They have platforms on either side. And if it's a band, it's perfect because you can put the drummer on this left part and then under him, you can put the bass player, vice versa. And on the right, you can have a guitarist and you can have a keyboardist. And then on the bottom, there's the slightly bigger and sort of final part of the stage before it goes down into the audience. And if I had just been standing there alone with no visual aid whatsoever, it probably would have made it a little more comfortable on stage. But, and this is something I'm still sort of debating or not, if I really want to keep doing this or not, but I think touring around these different rock clubs, it doesn't make sense to use one. I think if I do stick with venues like the America House, I will definitely use one because I love the additional sort of visual medium for it. But I used a projector for this main show that I've done. And at the Mila, having a like you have this physical projector screen on the stage with you. And then a you know, not so expensive, not so perfectly crystal clear projector pushing, you know, shooting your stuff onto the screen next to you. So also the cameras don't pick it up so nicely and it's not so high quality. And then you have to kind of squeeze yourself between the physical screen and the wall to do your stand-up comedy. Now, of course, I got used to the space and was able to make it work, and I still had a fun time. I didn't think about it while I was performing. But you go from that to the America House, where the projector screen drops down from the ceiling behind you, so you don't even see it. You would never run into it. It's enormous. It's the size of a movie screen. And they actually do have a huge movie screen in there with this like crazy bright 4K projector. They have like amazing equipment. So you're on this big theater stage with this giant screen behind you, and they have, you know, a clicker. You have like a legit, like, you know, hidden in the palm of my hand, a little clicker, like when you watch a TED Talk or something. Or when, you know, Steve Jobs might have, like, presented the new iPhone. He had a little, you know, thing in his hand and would turn. It's kind of like watching one of those iPhone reveal videos. You'd have this giant black stage and a huge screen behind you and then a clicker where he's just, like, talking to the audience. Never has to look at what he's looking at. Always knows what the next slide is. And that's so cool. It was this, and I had so much space. I had a perfect microphone set up. I had a little black table that, you know, didn't really stand out anywhere else, that was right there next to me for a couple of bottles of water. The screen behind me, I even was able to have a little TV monitor right in front of me that it was like bottom, like center and pretty flat. So it also, you know, the audience couldn't see that. It put a little light on my face, which is probably good. And I could always see what slide we were on without needing to turn around, which was also, it just looks more professional. So instead of imagining like the Mila one, where I'm literally clicking a button on my laptop and then coming back to the stage, which looks a little slow, it killed a little time, I'm staring right into the audience. I'm dressed nice. I wore my nice clothes. There's a big screen behind me, and I am just straight up like, I'm clicking, I'm going, I'm TED talking, And it just came out so smooth. It just came out so buttery, and I'm so happy with that. So yeah, I mean, I really just went off on a tangent about this screen, but Paul, this guy, Paul Zielinski, he was the sound guy, the tech man for everything. He was someone that I actually knew from a few years ago back here in Munich when he was running these English language open mics and I was coming in and playing music. And he was always very nice and supportive. He's a bit older than me, so we kind of, you know, didn't stay in touch so much after I stopped doing the open mics. But now it was so nice to run into him at this place, and he was so kind and funny and so helpful. At the hint of needing anything, he was there. Like, if I was like sitting on a fold out chair in the corner, just trying to not be in anybody's way, he'd come back and say, "Hey Jordan, I found you a much more comfortable chair. Here, look, I can move this. I'll scoot this to the side and you can sit in this nice cozy chair. And then look, you can put your water here. And no, look, we found some, you can have a nice beer, and I'll turn this corner so the audience can't see you, so you can have privacy. You can have a moment to yourself." Like, he was very, 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 very supportive to me. We did a sound check. We did a quality check with the screen. I ran the entire show on the stage before the audience came in. So I got used to the space, which you'd almost never have time to run the whole show. And yeah, the team were cool. The America House press people and the BR press people came in, and I did the obligatory, like, "Hey guys, this is Jordan Prince for the America House. Come see the show tonight. Da 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 da." So everything was set up. Everything was really good to go. It was commemorating this big anniversary for this major company at this beautiful old building where I was about to, you know, make very inappropriate penis jokes. And it was all perfect quality. I had a little bit of a surprise with our opening act. It was this opening act was definitely a super, super nice guy and definitely funny. He is, I guess, one of the DJs for BR, one of the guys who runs a radio show, and he's also a DJ, and he had, I don't know if he asked if he could or if they brought him in to be the opening act, but he wanted to play, there's a very old traditional Bavarian instrument, I always forget what it's called, like the Hackebrett thing, I don't know, it's like a little hammer, it's like these strings, like metal strings on this giant sort of old triangle looking wooden board, and you have these little tiny little hammers that you like bang, you like dong dong ding ding dong 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 boom boom, and they strike these chords, and he had it hooked up to a loop station, so he would like keep a rhythm, he'd like hit a string with a loop like dong 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 dong, and then on top of it he would play a thing, and he played the "Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?" Well, now I have to finish it. "Oh, so pretty we are, the twilight's last gleaming, whose bright stars, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, oh, red are we, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, and on our every clear, the one was stinging air, give proof to the light. Then a flare was still there. Oh, say, does there those mingled banners yet wear for the land of the free?" Yeah, he played that instrumentally on an old Bavarian instrument, which was funny. He wore suspenders and had these big goofy glasses. And yeah, definitely a funny combo. I showed up and I was like, "Oh, what's this instrument doing here? Oh, there's like a loop pedal. Oh, there's a different like PA setup here." And then Paul, the sound guy, was like, "Yeah, when I showed up here today, that was on stage." And I was like, "Oh, so you didn't know about it?" He goes, "No, I thought you did." I was like, "No." And then there was just a guy. So he came out, he played some music, and then he talked a little bit, made some jokes, and then he introduced me, and I came out. It was such a nice, warm crowd. The applause was so overwhelming. It was so sweet. And man, let me tell you something. I think it's good that it happens, but there is something so hard about how fast and hard your heart beats when you walk out there. Like, it is borderline, am I going to have a stroke? You know, like, I'm sitting back there, I'm trying to calm down my, I'm trying to, like, breathe my heart rate, my mouth gets super dry. I get nervous now that I've had, like, three sips of a beer, so now I've switched to water to, like, just calm down, it's okay, just relax. I am just, like, not doing well back there. But I'm excited, too, and then I tell myself, no, but it's like, I'm not scared. This is just so exciting. It's just so, it's a lot. Public speaking's freaky dicky, dude. I think it actually still is the number one greatest human fear taken from, like, every poll. I think a lot of polls are, you know, like, shark bites or spider bites or, you know, getting left at the altar at your wedding or something like that. And the number one fear usually is public speaking still. And I totally understand why. I was a lot better on this show than my Milla show. That's also something I want to talk about. I think I did way better than the Milla show. There was only one person in this whole event that saw the other show as well as this one. This wonderfully kind man named Max, who is the journalist for BR, who did the piece on me. That's also in the show notes here for the Capriccio piece. You can watch it right now if you haven't seen it already. Max is the journalist who interviewed me and put that piece on. And I think he might have even been the person to recommend me to the event organizer for this from BR to invite me to actually do the show. And he came from BR to do the show, or to, you know, to, he came to, you know, whatever, like, write about the show, and he saw both, and even he agreed at the end. I was like, so what'd you think? You know, you're the only one who saw both shows, and he, you know, he, in his own words, he was like, that was so much tighter, you were so much more comfortable, I could tell that you were, you know, you'd gotten a lot more relaxed and were laughing a lot less, like, sort of at your nervousness, or you were laughing less about, like, laughing less from fear and laughing more about just if something just felt funny. He's like, and you can feel that confidence. I was like, oh, thank God. By the end of that show, there's a segment in that set, and at the end, it's once I get to the German expressions segment, there's a whole segment about certain expressions that we look at in English and, like, how Germans got to this, like, how they came up with these crazy things. From there until the end of the show, also at the Milla show, also at the first one, but at this one, I was completely 100% at full peace. I was so relaxed. I had already won the audience over. I already knew I had done well, which is the best feeling. You can't lose now. They're going to leave and having enjoyed it, so you're good. Just have fun yourself. And to be on that stage in front of 300 plus people and to know that you're good and that they like you and that they're having fun, it's the best feeling because it feels very communal. You feel very connected. You can, you know, from like midpoint through on the show, was even able to look a lot of the audience members right in the eyes when I was finishing a bit or finishing a story or when emphasizing something. When I would, you know, have a joke or a line that's like, you don't know what that's like, you know, or whatever. And that you is meant for everyone, but it hits a little harder if I look someone right in the eyes and I'm like, you don't know, do you? You know, or whatever I say. But for the first stretch of these shows, I'm, of course, way too nervous to do that. And I tend to enjoy when a spotlight kind of blinds me. It also helps to have the hat, like the spotlight will sort of, you know, shoot right over the brim of my hat and, like, be right in my eyes enough where I don't see any faces. And I can stare out into the middle distance. And for the first stretch of jokes, I definitely only do that. I just stare out into the middle distance until my heart rate calms down. One thing that really helped me, and I'm so happy that this happened, because it was kind of just luck that it came into my head, was I have watched the recording of my Milla show so many times now to prepare for this one. And I kept being so surprised how, like, I wouldn't say how little nervous I came off, but I know that I still am like laughy and awkwardly nervous enough to note for people to notice in those first 5 minutes or so. But it was way less than I thought. Same for the interview I had with Christina P, also in the show notes. The podcast with her, the first 10 or 15 minutes, I'm very nervous, heart in my chest nervous, but it didn't come off even a fraction as bad as it felt. And there was some magical, wonderful thing that happened to me where I came out to this huge audience, shook hands with the opener, Tobias, got my microphone, and, you know, said, like, give another round of applause for Tobias, the opener, and took that chance to take a sip of water because my throat was just exploding. Felt my actual heart, like, popping out of my throat like I had a frog trying to give birth. And went right into, like, what an honor to be here. I feel so flattered to be asked to be part of this amazing anniversary. What an accomplishment from Bayerischer Rundfunk. And that already just saying, like, Bayerischer Rundfunk, just saying it like a little goofy made people chuckle. And I thought, oh, this is going to be good. This is going to work. And in this one magical moment, just as I started into my first joke has this thing of saying, like, I need to make it crystal clear. I am not German. I know I look the part. I'm sure I have German roots. And if there was a documentary narrated about my life, I'm very sure it would be narrated by Werner Herzog. And then I do an impression of him. And when I space it, when I space those words out, like, I'm not German. I know I look the part. You know, I'm kind of setting up as we ease into these stories. In those little gaps, I felt my heart so pumping so much. And I felt myself, like, needing to swallow in between these gaps to keep from, like, piling up spit in my mouth. Something magical happened where I remembered that I don't come off as nervous to them as I feel. It was so lucky. It was like a miracle. I remembered watching the Christina P thing, watching the Milla show, and more specifically, maybe even the Christina P thing, because it really doesn't, it's really not bad. And having people whose opinions are very honest, who I really trust, for them to say at the Milla show, like, yeah, sure, first few minutes, of course, you're a little nervous, but it's not as bad as you thought. You didn't stumble over any words. You didn't mess anything up. And then at the Christina P thing, having the same people say, oh, you didn't seem nervous at all, which is, like, unbelievable to me. This magical thing came up. I'm doing the intro, all these new phases, huge crowd. There's that buzz of energy. I've just grabbed the mic. I'm so anxious. And I remembered to say it to myself. You don't come off as nervous to them as you feel. And something about that just, it wasn't instant. You know, I didn't instantly fix me. There's this thing about doing stand-up where you need to get a good roll of laughs going first. But it really helped me calm down. It really, really helped me stay focused. It helped me stay focused on the first stretch of jokes. And I wasn't 100% sure until a little later in, like, the second, you know, like, when I got to, the way that it's set up is, like, I talk a little bit about, like, not being German, but a lot of people think that I am. And then starting with my early life as a big kid. And I have a little story about being this big kid who, you know, awkwardly, you know, unintentionally took his shirt off in a class and got embarrassed. And that leads into a thing about cross-country skiing and sauna. But that whole first chapter about being the big kid who took his shirt off didn't really get much laughter at all. And not in such a bad way that I thought I was bombing or something. I thought, okay, I've got to, you know, crank things up a notch. And, like, I know the next section's going to kill. I know the next section's going to do well. because it's really been I remember how it came off before. I know it's going to do well. I've just got to get to it and just power through this. But there was a couple of like punchlines where I was like sitting on the note, really thinking, oh, uh-huh, that didn't land like I thought it would. And then later, my friend David Reichelt, my friend David was at the show, which was so cool. He showed up, and at the end, I was like, hey, he was saying he really thought that the show did really well. And then I was like, you know what's funny is the first stretch, the first story about being the fat kid, no one really laughed. I got really scared that it wasn't going to go well. He's like, ah, well, you know, we're Germans. We feel like it's too inappropriate to laugh at a child who's suffering or embarrassed. And I was like, oh, I never thought about that. Like, they probably, he's like, as soon as you got to stuff that wasn't about like anything really heavy about you, like with weight or like a child suffering or, you know, all those sort of like ideas, he's like, I mean, not suffering, but he's like, as soon as you got off of like the stuff about that, the embarrassing stuff, like a kid being embarrassed, once you moved into just a more general thing about Germans or other stories about yourself that were like you making goofy choices or you know, being an adult where something embarrassing happens, he's like, then it was great. He's like, there was no issue, but there was maybe they felt like they couldn't laugh. Like, I think he's like, maybe they didn't know how serious it was meant to be. And where it was going to go. So they were just a little scared to like laugh at the embarrassed kid. And I was like, oh, I never thought about that. Cause I think as an American, my first instinct is like, yeah, it's a fat kid. That's funny. But a German might think like, oh, but he was probably very embarrassed and, you know, or maybe it's just that crowd that night. I don't know. Maybe it's how it came off. It's a lot of factors involved with it, but it made a lot of sense to me after. But yeah, I was in that section. It wasn't doing very well and I was a little bit nervous. And then when we got into that Langlaufski, the cross country section with the cycling shorts, that one did really well. I can't believe I showed a penis Venn diagram in such a beautiful historical building for the BR of all people. But yeah, I did. I think after that, it was really good. Like from the, once I had the sauna story down, and then, you know, going into, let's see, there's the, yeah, Germany, the nudity. And then back to teenage Jordan. And then there's a couple other little jokes, a little moments that didn't land how I thought they would, that I was a little surprised about, but I think I just have to stick with what I think for this tour, and really it was a good practice to know, okay, well, this stuff is gonna land hard and this stuff is more of a risk. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, but if I really like it and I want to tell it, I will. Like there's some stuff in there about family, and you know, I talked a little bit about my brother, and then we had people coming up after and saying like, oh, I really connected with that part. Or when I talked about the language, I had people coming up and saying that that's the kind of jokes that really helped them get through like the struggle of learning it, because it's so tough for them as it is for me. There was this really nice, really pretty American girl working for the America House. And when she first came into the room to do the press before the show started, she was speaking so absolutely perfect, flawless, accent-free German to her colleague that I just assumed they're both German. And then at the end, when I did the press stuff for them and they were leaving, I just said, hey, so I have to say, because her English sounded a little weird. And I said, you know, you have such a really great, your English is like really incredible. It sounds as like you can just barely hear like kind of a little weird accent. I was like, you can just barely hear a little thing in there. Like, you must have lived in the States for a long time. And she goes, oh, well, actually, I'm from Pennsylvania. And then that triggered me to go, oh, your English sounds weird. Like, once I knew she was American, I was like, you sound weird. And she's like, oh, well, yeah, I've just been speaking. It's like, my brain has been in German for so long now that I think my English has been affected by it. And I was like, yeah, that happens. And then I said, oh, okay. So I was like, your German is so fluid and so fluent and so perfect that I just really assumed you were German. She goes, oh, thank you. And I said, how long have you lived in Germany now? It must be like, what, 8 or 9 years? And she's like, oh, no, no, just 3. And then I said, don't talk to me anymore. Go away. I don't ever want to see you again the rest of my life. All these psychos who learn the language that quickly. It's crazy. It's crazy to me. It really freaked me out. But yeah, she was, 1 second, I'm writing something down. And English, weird. Yeah, I might put something about that in my new show. Let's see. But yeah, some things didn't land like I thought they would, but it was really just a good learning experience. It didn't slow me down. It didn't scare me. I was so happy that it didn't. And then, of course, you know, you get to the sauna stuff. You get to my first trip in France. You get to little things about New Orleans. A lot of people had actually been to New Orleans, which was really amazing. I made a moment to drink a sip of water, where I was like, clap if you've been to New Orleans. But then, like, a lot of the people clapped, and I was really like, oh, that's great. And I have to say it, otherwise I'll regret not saying it. And I know this sounds braggadocious, which I hate to do, but I have to say it. There were a handful of times that just made me feel so much like a professional comic. It's just, there was enough times, there was a good handful of times where I would finish a story or land a very strong punchline about something I was talking about, and the laughter would go long enough that it would turn into applause. And I have only ever experienced that like watching like really good comics where someone finishes a story and they do a good callback, or they just solve it with a really good, you know, final joke, and the laughter goes on long enough that they applaud it, like saying, that was a great joke, or that was a great story. Which gave me time to have, again, like a sip of water and just to drink it in. Just to literally like look at these people applauding how funny it was. Just gave me all this confidence. It just really, I hope that this is not some sort of simulation and that was not real. And that I'm being like played by some alien species that is like sucking my body life for battery to fuel their ship and just like playing whatever I want to experience into my head. Because that would suck. I really would love to know that was real, that really happened, because it's so crazy. A lot of bits landed really well. Audience really was so responsive to it. And when I said thank you at the end, they gave me a standing ovation, which is unbelievable to me. That's so crazy. The games went very well. There was an older lady in the front row, like in her 60s, who I was very sure came because it was a free show from the BR and not because she really knew who I was. And when I got to the segment about this German expression, I think my pig is whistling, she snorted. She like couldn't control herself. And I was like, yes, I got it. And then the show was over. Everyone was so receptive. They clapped forever. I was like, I could cry even now. Like, even now, it's like such an emotional thing for me, like how beautiful that feeling was. And then they wanted to do a Q&A. And I made sure to emphasize to the people, like, hey, if you have a question, I'll happily answer it. If you don't feel pressured. I know it's a Monday. I know people want to get home, you know, because it was already, you know, 9:30 or something. I didn't want people to stay out too late on a Monday. People have work. People have to get home. And then I wanted to do like a meet and greet. You know, I wanted to be able to take pictures with anybody who might want to. And so the Q&A was like three questions, and they were all pretty funny and pretty good. Some of the older people started to leave once we started that, and I figured, okay, let's just... Sorry, 1 second. Hold on, I'm going to pause this, because I've got some phlegm in my throat, and I can't focus with it. One second. Okay. All right. I'm back. Yeah, it was, the questions were pretty good, pretty funny. There was someone from the South that was asking about, like, you know, culture shocks when you go back home, like stuff like with the, you know, with the heavy food or whatever. Someone else asking about, like, what kind of Spott do I like to make? And I understood that as, like, a German Spott, like making Spott. So I just said, like, well, of all the German things that Germans do, probably swimming. But I guess if it was like an American sport, probably basketball would be number one, which I didn't even think of in the moment. There's so many funny things that just don't come to mind when you're like standing on the stage. And it was, I was so proud of how comfortable I felt just standing there, like all the house lights on, looking at all the people. Now I had done my job, so like all the pressure was over. And I just love that feeling. I just love, I can't wait to do that again. I can't wait to go back and do that. I have a couple of small performances in July, like July 20th, I'm going to be at Brim Bamborium, doing probably a good half-half music and comedy. I still have to kind of decide what I want to do for that. And then for the, and then I think the 23rd of July, I think like 3 days later, it's either, I think it's a Monday or a Tuesday, I'm going to be at the Ampere in Munich, most likely, doing some new comedy in preparation for the tour as part of, excuse me, as part of Super Bloom Festival, just a small thing, a small like pre or post festival sort of, you know, hangout show, nothing crazy. I'll probably just run some new material in there and practice it for the tour. Yeah, amazing show. I'm so grateful to America House and BR for having me. And I hope that me talking about this the way that I did, like, doesn't come off in any other way as just, like, how in shock I am that I get to do something like this. How happy I am that I get to do this. How welcomed I feel. How loved I feel. And no other, I hope it didn't come off as like too, too braggy or anything. I just can't believe it actually happened, and I just need to talk about it to be sure it was real. And after the show, we did another meet and greet, like at the Mila, and again, it was like 90 minutes, you know, of just this huge line of people just waiting to come, shake my hand. We took photos. It was just crazy. I just couldn't, and at the end, I just had nothing left in me. Like at the end, I completely fell asleep in the Uber on the way home. I just had nothing in me. It was crazy. The next day, I was still so tired that I had to take a nap before lunch. I was like, I just am so dead. Like I don't have any breath in me. But I do want to keep doing that as long as I possibly can. As long as the shows have a manageable amount of people like that, then I would love to try and meet as many people as I can. And on this tour, you know, I'm going to have a merch table set up, and I'm going to definitely still do some meeting and greeting because I love you guys. Was there anything else I wanted to talk about? This Saturday, June 8th, for those who listen to this in Berlin, probably not too many. I think the listener base for this is still pretty local, but I will be in Berlin for one night on June 8th, mostly at this one event at the Soho House. Oh, fancy schmancy at the Soho House. I didn't book it. I didn't set it up, okay? I just, you know, it's my agency. They're having an event at the Soho House. And I've been invited. So now I've got to try and starve myself for 4 days and then buy some nice clothes. No, I've got nice clothes now. I'm fine. I'm going to, go to the Soul Hole House and see some persnickety, uppity people. And then also my agency, because they're not the same. But they did book it there, so, you know, whatever. It's their pocketbook, not mine. And, yeah. So I don't know if it even makes sense to announce being there, because I guess I don't have much time for anything, for to like run into anybody for a coffee or something. But anyway, if you see me there and you think you might have seen me there, it was probably me. I'll be around the Soho House on the 8th for most of the evening. And then I come back the very next day back to Munich. It's a little one night only special event. And was there any other things? Yeah, I have the, like I said, July 20th, Brand Bamborium, nice little open air festival with a lot of bands, and then me. So if you want to come to that, July 23rd, most likely, I think it's not in stone yet, but I'll be at the Ampere in Munich as part of Super Bloom Festival. In September, I'm going to be doing this, I'll be on the panel for this Migrapreneur event. I'm not doing stand-up, but I'll be on this panel probably for some Q&A and stuff. That's also in Berlin. And I'll be doing a show, I don't know if it's open to the public, in September at the U.S. Embassy here in Munich, about water. And city water, public water, sparkling water, the liquids. And yeah, then the sold-out tour. And then we will announce new dates not long after that. We have a lot of new graphics and merch to prepare for. Cool updates. Right now, I haven't heard much in a while from the book people. I'm going to touch base with my agency about that. Let me put a little reminder, because I thought I would have heard something by now from them. The book people, that'll be interesting to keep up with. And Diane Kruger commented on one of my videos. I mean, I've announced here before that she follows me, but she's engaged with my content? Are you out of your mind, Diane? Have you lost your way? Have you lost your stride in life? From Troy to National Treasure to Inglourious Basterds to commenting on a Jordan Prince video? Oh, and also, did I talk about how Bill Burr watched one of my videos? No, I did not, because it was so small, and he didn't even say my name, and he thinks I'm German. But still, Bill Burr watched all of one of my videos, which is pretty crazy. He has seen my face, he has heard my voice, he saw the outside wall of my parents' house. That's bonanzas. One of my videos, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but for one reason, one thing or another, the video did very well, like several million views. Me being a Johannes saying what American thinks that Germany needs. And yeah, you can, he hits one of his Monday morning podcasts. It was like one from whatever in May something, May 4th or somewhere in mid May. And he was like, hey, he's like, haha, I saw this video of a German guy talking about what Americans, American stuff that Germany needs to have. And then he made a joke at the end about not having everything bagels. And then this one comment, made a joke about knowing 6 million reasons why. And he loved the person's comment. And his entire reason for bringing up the story is because he thought the person's comment was funny, which it is. But it means he sat there on his phone probably in his home studio, next to his drum set with a cigar, and watched all of one of my videos. Probably because I'm friends with Christina P and he's friends with her. She and I follow each other. Now we three, like, I follow him. He doesn't follow me, but maybe he will one day. Who knows? But that's cool. And yeah, we'll see what happens. I hope I get to go to some cool events this year. There's going to be like the Munich Film Fest, and hopefully, I think, what's her name? Oh, I think Kate Winslet is going to be, they are selling tickets to events where you can have the chance to meet her. Kate Winslet will be at some events this year at the Film Fest, and I really would love to cross paths with her, because what an icon. What an icon. I was invited to the Berlinale event last year at this embassy thing I told you guys about, and Sharon Stone was there. But Kate Winslet strikes me more. There's something about, like, I grew up with Kate Winslet. And I met these people at the America House who were talking about that. And I was like, oh my God, Kate Winslet, right, she'll be there. Man, what an icon. I love everything she's ever done. And these people said, I don't know anything she's done besides Titanic. And then I said, if I ever see you again, I'm going to punch your teeth out, you stupid, ignorant pieces of just kidding, guys. I was mad at them, but of course I didn't say that because I'm a professional. Guys, thank you so much for listening to this completely unhinged ramble pot as usual. I just love you guys. I can't express enough how much this sold-out tour means to me. Hopefully I can provide a new online shop soon. It's so annoying. It's so stressful to try and do all this stuff by myself. I need a team. I need people to do this stuff for me. So hopefully one day I will. I'm going to be on tour. Maybe I can have some cool new merch by then. Hopefully I hear from book people soon. There's a hot sauce company that wants to make a Jordan Prince hot sauce, just like we made the Jordan Prince cold brew last year. So maybe we're going to be doing that, baby. Let's see it. Let's see, maybe, baby. Let's see what's going to happen. I'll keep you guys updated. As usual, Artsy Fartsy Immigrants fans will always hear about upcoming news first. You guys will always hear it first, even if you're not really supposed to hear about it at all. You guys are going to hear about it first. So thank you so much. Thanks again. Shout out to Paul Zielinski. Thank you again, Paul, for the wonderful, if you hear this episode, I know we talked about this podcast briefly when we spoke on Monday, but if you hear it, you made it so special. You were the one who made it so awesome for me. So thank you. You're very, very good at your job. And thanks again to BR and anyone who might be listening from America House. Thanks for those who sold out this tour. And I cannot wait to see your beautiful faces again. You've really, really, really made me a very happy person, and I owe all of this to you guys. So thank you so much. I love you, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Look out, baby. The saints are coming through. And it's all over now. Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prince und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.